cause a problem with magnetic media anyway, yeah.
I can't take these back to the airport either. How many other students were there in that graduate group?
They were just about all in each one of these initial classes, and so as I remember, it must have been about 20. That included biochemistry students also from PNF, from that's the biochemistry group at the medical school, physicians and surgeons.
Okay.
PNS. So I think of the pure chemistry students, there's probably like something like 12.
The appearance, and I may be wrong here, the appearance is that the department was concentrated in the physical chemistry aspects rather than the organic, is that?
Well, there was a fairly strong organic group.
Hammett was there then, wasn't he?
Hammett was there, right. Man named Elderfield, who was a synthetic, I guess natural products guy, actually, I think was pretty well known. And Nelson had done some rather interesting work in the years before, I believe. He was pretty old by that time. But it's true, I guess, probably the more outstanding people on the group were the physical chemists, Urey and Mayer, Mayer, and I guess they were the ones who were probably best known.
I was curious that you migrated towards physical chemistry, even though I think you said earlier that it was the organic laboratory experience that gave you your first...
I found the organic laboratory very interesting. In fact, I found organic chemistry very interesting, and I remember being rather uncertain as to whether I should go toward organic or toward physical when I went to graduate school. I'm sure I made the right choice, but I don't remember exactly what influenced it. Probably just a lot of little things.
Mm-hmm. Now, we approach the summer of 1942. You've finished the first year, and are you ready? Were you at this point getting ready, after passing the qualifiers, to select a thesis advisor?
Right.
And how did you selected Mayer? How did that? How did you make that selection?
It was a matter of going around talking to people, other students, and seeing what they were doing and what seemed most interesting to us personally, us, I mean, the first year class. Mm-hmm. Of the people I'd interacted with strongly, Beaver was doing practically no research. He didn't have any research students. Lamaire, whom actually I worked for in that summer on a war project on smokes, I found to be a difficult man personally. And he was volatile. Yeah. You never knew what he was going to do next. And I think that influenced me to a considerable degree. And also, he didn't have much of a research project emphasis at that point because his war work had really started up. Whereas Mayer had some interesting things in several areas, good physical chemistry, as good that even I could recognize at the time as a beginning student. And I had met him personally. He was actually had come around to help with the physical chemistry laboratory. He had come to help Beaver at times, so I had met him. So, and he had a very good reputation among the students. So it was that. Beckman might have been a choice, but at that time I didn't know much about macromolecules except for the course I had, and I didn't realize anything about the significance of them, so it never occurred to me probably to work for him.
And Urey wasn't available.
And Urey was, right. Urey was all tied up with war research. In fact, my friend Paul Doty had come to Columbia to work with Urey, and Urey told him that it was just not going to be possible. So Doty and I both went to work for Mayer.
Doty was a year ahead?
No, he was in the same class.
Oh, he was in the same class.
Yeah.
Okay.
We ended up sitting next to each other in Lamaire's thermodynamics because Lemay arranged everybody alphabetically so he'd keep track of who was who, and I was the end of the alphabet. And Doty came in late, so he sat next to me.
I would like to talk about those first experiences with the war effort in the summer of 42. Before we go into that, you had selected Mayer before, or was it?
No, I think we selected him by the end of the summer.
Okay.
Actually,
you hadn't done it.
Yeah.
And the work you did with Lemaire during the summer, was that by choice or was that sort of expected as part of the... how did you get into that particular project, let me put it that way?
I don't remember whether he invited us in or whether we went looking, but it happened very naturally, whichever it was. I think probably every graduate student at the time was being invited to work on something during the summer.
Could you tell me something about that work on light scattering smokes?
The project was to work on screening smokes, smoke screens, in other words. And I believe it had been initiated by the OSRD, Office of Scientific Research and Development, at, if not the initiation, at least with early involvement of Irving Langmuir. And Lemaire was brought in very much at the beginning of it to set up some of the experimental work. So Billy and I got in on that quite early. And at that point, the interest was in looking at smokes of colored dyes to see whether one could get a smoke which you could would be opaque at visible wavelengths but would be transparent at some selected, still visible wavelength. So we worked on that all summer. I remember building generators to make smokes of these dyes, heat them up, blowing air over them to get a vapor and condensing it.
Where did you do this?
It was in the Columbia Laboratories, actually.
Okay.
Chandler Laboratory,
okay.
Sixth floor was the, was the place. Sixth floor Chandler Laboratories, Lemaire's Laboratories, which he had been using before for all his other work, later just converted over to this.
Did you have any ventilation problems or?
The place had good hoods, good chemical laboratories set up, so we didn't have any problem that way. I do remember we had a fire or two from oil baths, which we put out right away with portable extinguishers, which were out in the hall. And then we had to build some sort of a spectrophotometer, a very crude kind, using just auto taillight bulbs and colored filters to measure the transmission of these smokes. We had a long copper tube about 3-4 meters long, extending most of the length of the laboratory, introduce the smoke at one end, pass a light beam through two glass windows, and see what kind of colors were produced.
What kind of results did you get from that?
Nothing very interesting. The we could get smokes with unusual scattering and transmission characteristics. We had, for example, a green smoke, I remember, made from a red dye. It looked green and it'd transmit red light fairly well and scatter the shorter wavelengths. But it had to be a very dilute smoke because the particle size had to be very small in order to get these effects. If we went to a large particle size, then light was all absorbed rather than being scattered and absorbed in these large particles, and then you lost the effect completely. It just looked like a pink smoke. It didn't scatter anything especially. In order to keep the very small particles, you had a very dilute smoke, which meant that it didn't have much screening power.
You said that Langer had been brought in. Did you meet him at all during that project?
No, I didn't meet him then. I don't know what he was doing at that point. He never came around to this anyway.
I see. Just as an aside, last November I interviewed Hoyt Hoddle at MIT, and he was telling me about some a meeting he had in which Langmuir was sitting next to him, and he had been describing some of the laws of jets. He was an expert on combustion, and he said that Langmuir, when Langmuir heard that, he said, "That's just what I need for my smoke screens."
Uh-huh.
So I thought that I'd pass that along. Since
Well, I don't know what Langmuir was involved at the time. It wasn't, didn't come around to our project anyway. He had helped get it started, but... So that was that summer of 42.
Now, did you continue that on into the academic year? Or did
no, at the end of the summer, we went back to school, so to speak. And I was a teaching assistant in the physical chemistry laboratory, and probably took one of these courses that I talked about there. Oh, I know, I took a course in the physics department in quantum mechanics all that year.
You remember who you took it with?
A guy named Keller, Joe Keller, K-E-L-L-E-R. I don't know what has ever become of him. He was a fairly young guy at the time. Oh, and there was a course I forgot to mention before, in mathematics, differential equations. That was that other course in the first year. Yeah. That was in the physics department. It was taught by a guy named Webb.
At that point, in terms of your math, was that becoming satisfying for you when you got to that course?
Yeah, that was an interesting course. It was a bit of a rush. They loaded a lot of material into us in a short time. But I found it to be interesting material. I've used it a lot since, too.
And this may again have been something that Stockmeyer wrote, but I'll ask you anyway. So was the mayor and Kimball had this lunch club at the
war. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in that at all?
We the whole research group of both research groups, and usually Stockmeyer, who was an instructor, and would go out to lunch, I think, every Monday. Well, maybe not every Monday, but pretty frequently.
How long did that? There's a number of people that you met during that time, and I want to ask you about them. How long did this kind of activity go on?
I think it kept on right through my graduate career at Columbia. After a while, Mayer got involved with the Aberdeen Proving Grounds and only came up to Columbia on Mondays. The rest of the week he was down there. But we still had the Monday Lunch Club. And Maria Mayer got involved with the Manhattan Project, but so she was around all the time. Kimball was there all the time.
Did you meet some of the people that showed up, Fermi and...
No. I don't remember Fermi ever coming. Teller came once in a while.
Any reaction about seeing Teller at that time?
Actually, several of us went and had an informal course from Teller in theoretical physics for a while, and it sort of petered out after a while because it was very informal. A very unorganized course. He would get up and discourse on whatever he felt like. It was kind of interesting, but not a very good learning experience.
Was his reputation such at that time that...
No, he didn't have a reputation at that time such as he has since. No father to hydrogen bomb or anything. He was best known for, probably, the BET equation.
Right. Did you... You said you went to him. Did you ask him to do this then, or was he...
I don't remember how it got started. Whether somebody asked him whether he offered, or whether some of the faculty suggested it, or what. But it was anyway. It did take place for a while. I think something like a couple of months, and then sort of died out.
Anyone else that showed up during that time, during that war effort, that Kirkwood?
Kirkwood was not around. Fermi by that time was in Chicago, I think. The various well-known people, the big names, there were, I don't think there was anybody else, nobody I remember. They were all elsewhere.
And Urey was still gone, too.
Urey was running the Columbia Manhattan Project. He was the head of it. So he was very much around, but he didn't involve himself in any seminars or anything like that.
And were you aware of the Manhattan Project, or that work that was going on?
Yeah, but I didn't know what it was. It gradually one began to put things together, like there were jars of uranium nitrate stacked outside Pupin Physics Laboratories. And I was, during spring vacation, I guess of the first year, they needed some help in a hurry, and they recruited several of us to try a fractionation scheme on uranium, water ether two-phase separation business. Didn't tell us what it was for. I remember innocently asking, what are we trying to do, separate something? And there was sort of a laugh, and nobody said anything. And I got the impression that was not the right question. But I think it gradually sort of percolated that it was an atomic energy project.
Was Mayer involved in that at all?
No. He was at the Aberdeen Proving Ground. I mean, he may have been involved in some way, I don't know, but he was not to any large extent involved.
How did his being away affect your PhD work?
Very little, actually. His laboratory was all there. There were some older graduate students who knew where things were. And if it hadn't been for the fact that I'd had a lot of mechanical experience back there on the abandoned farm, it probably would have been very difficult, but I knew how to put things together and solder things and so forth. So I didn't have any trouble. Mayer just suggested a project, and it was following work of some previous students of his, measuring vapor pressures of alkali halides. And in fact, there was even a starting apparatus that a previous student had started and then abandoned, so I could just get right to it. And I just talked to him when he was around about anything that happened to have come up, but usually it was not a matter of much necessity, it was just a matter of getting advice once in a while.
I've forgotten, was Doty working in a similar area?
Yeah, we both started there in the same laboratory at the same time. He worked on electron affinity of some halogen compounds, and I worked on vapor pressure of alkali halides, so it was very similar work, using much of the same apparatus, same galvanometers and so on.
Was this sufficient to keep you out of the draft at that point?
It was required. Well, I think more than that probably was being a teaching assistant.
Okay.
That was sufficient for a couple of years, and then I got my PhD just in time and got onto war project again when the rules got tightened up.
So you really didn't get back to Lemaire's smoke work until after you finished your PhD?
That's right. 1944, I guess it was. I got my PhD in that summer and started that spring, and I started work on his project at the beginning of the spring when my own laboratory work was finished, before I'd written it all up.
Did you ask him to go back to work on that, or had was that? Let me ask a more general question. How were, in general, the effect of the war on the graduate students' PhD work? Were they able to combine any thesis work with war work, or was it separated?
There may have been cases in which they did. I don't know. In many cases, the man had to stop and go over to the Manhattan Project as an employee, essentially. That happened to several friends of mine. And in some cases, they stopped at the and went into the services. Actually, several of the ones that went into the project first were drafted, went into the service, then the Army sent them back.
Okay.
And they came back in uniform.
So they were fulfilling their military obligation by working on the project.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
How long did you continue that work with Lemaire then, until the war was over?
No, not quite. I was stayed there for until, I think, December of 44, and I knew about the project that Herman Mark was running at Brooklyn Polytechnic, because Paul Doty had gone to that directly from his PhD at the end of 1943, and that seemed to me much more interesting work, so I managed after a while to transfer from one project to the other, which was by no trivial thing. You didn't change jobs during the war very easily.
I asked you how you managed that.
Yeah. Well, I had to get Lemaire's permission to leave the project. I had, of course, get an offer from Mark's project, and then I had to go and see somebody at the War Manpower Commission, I think it was called, in downtown New York, and get their permission to transfer. And I managed to do all that at the end of the end of 1944.
It raises another interesting question, that is that the transmittal of scientific information during that time, do you think it was highly curtailed? Were you
well,
still
certainly
having seminars and
Well, certain things were. We continue to have seminars at Columbia. One probably thing worth mentioning was a seminar that Charlie Beckman ran on macromolecules, which, aside from his course, was really my first introduction to the subject. And I remember having to give a talk on rubber elasticity. So that was where I think began to see macromolecules as a possible research field as opposed to something you learn about in a course. Well, that was run without any restriction. The restrictions, of course, came in talking about what was going on in the Manhattan Project. Nobody could do that.
Mm-hmm. And what had Dodie been telling you about what Mark was doing? What was it that intrigued you about that?
We got into that. It was a bit of a sideline from the main project that Mark was running, which was working on polymers that were of use in films and coatings, things like this briefcase,
mm-hmm.
Which got military using for raincoats, gun covers, all kinds of stuff. But in the process, you need to know what the polymer molecular weight was. And this was something which I wrote up in that article you referred to in the Annual Reviews of Physical Chemistry. Anyway, there was this new method that Debye developed to measure molecular weight by light scattering, unpublished, but Mark's project heard about it, so Dodie heard about it, so he came back and told us about it because he and Macmillan, who was also a student of Mayer's, William Macmillan, and I were interested in light scattering because it looked like a good way to look at the critical phenomenon that Mayer was interested in and which Macmillan was doing his thesis on. So when this light-scattering method molecular weights came up, well, of course, we were all attuned to understand what it was. And we had the apparatus, which Charlie Beckman had sitting around for years. And when he heard us talking about it, he said, I've got the apparatus. So we already used it to look at critical points in Macmillan's triethylamine water system. And all we had to do then was get some polymer solutions, which Dodie could get from Mark's project and measure them.
So you did that at Columbia, though?
Did that at Columbia, yeah. Yeah. Well, Dodie was already at Brooklyn, mm-hmm. but he came back and forth, mm-hmm. and I was still at Columbia just finishing up my thesis.
What was the offer from Mark's group for then? You just went through the mechanism for making that transfer.
Yeah. It was to join their project on polymer films. As I guess I call it a research assistant, I think was the title of the job.
And were you given an assignment then when you joined that group?
Look at polymer polyvinyl chloride degradation. They're using polyvinyl chloride mainly in the films, and it degrades easily in sunlight and also in heat, or both together. And my assignment was to study that.
And could you tell me something about what you found at Poly when you went there in 1944?
Well, it was a dilapidated old physical establishment. Laboratories, Columbia laboratories weren't so wonderful, but the Poly ones were considerably less so. And in fact, the lab that I had was the part of the old morgue of the hospital that that building had been before. At least that's what they told me. But there was a very lively spirit among the people that Mark had brought in.
Mm-hmm.
He had brought in some young people, and then there were, of course, the older faculty members of the Institute who were happy to see us around, I think, and that was a good thing. They might not necessarily have been that way, but they were.
Mm-hmm. Which of those people that Mark had brought in did you interact with the most?
Well, Dodie, a great deal. Alna Turner-Alfrey,
okay.
The three of us had many interests in common, and we were talking to each other all the time.
And what about Mark? Did you get to see him?
Yeah, but he was, then as now, was traveling a lot. In the case of Mark, it was a matter of his being at talks that we were giving and conversations in the corridor once in a while and so on, but not a matter of much of discussing day-to-day research.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me something about Turner Alfrey, your experiences with him?
He had gotten his degree with Mark a year or two before, and at that point the time I'm talking about there, he was part-time on this project, and part-time he was working for the Monsanto Chemical Company in Connecticut. So he commuted back and forth for a while between the two. I'm not quite sure what kind of an arrangement that was. Then I think later in that project he came down to Brooklyn full-time. He was a thorough polymer chemist. That was what he had been brought up to, so to speak. And that was, of course, important from my point of view because I hadn't had much contact with it aside from the seminar that I talked about up to that point. And so learned, I think, by osmosis quite a bit of polymer chemistry from him. He was a very easy guy to talk to and full of good humor and lots of original bright ideas.
Did you have any other, in addition to your interaction with the people and working on the project, did you do anything else at Poly in terms of getting more polymer background in your courses? Or
no, it was learning polymers there was a matter of learning by doing an osmosis from other people. There was just a lot of work going on. In addition to the people I mentioned, there was some organic work going on. The man named Hohenstein, Peter Hohenstein, had a group, I think also associated with the same project, several graduate students. They were synthesizing polymers. Forgotten just what.
Is Overberger there then?
Overberger was not there yet. No, okay. That was later. And there was Van Kooken, who was an X-ray man. And we occasionally used his equipment to take a picture of a stretched piece of polyvinyl chloride or something. And see, were there any other polymer people? I think not at that time. That was had some students of Mark's and of Doty's. Oh, and then there's a biochemist named Kurt Stern. That's K-U-R-T. This is another Kurt Stern. With a C, but this is Kersey as a biochemist, came there at that period, and his lab was set up right next to mine in the basement. He had an ultracentrifuge, and he was looking at DNA. My first acquaintance with DNA.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. So
mm-hmm. One of his graduate students was S.J. Singer, who is now a colleague of mine at La Jolla. I guess actually Singer was officially a graduate student of Marx, but he actually worked with Stern.
Now, can you tell me something about you were looking at the degradation. Can you tell me something about what kinds of experiments you did or what?
Yeah, never published any of it in the open literature. There was a big report written at the end of the project describing things that we found. But never any papers. We found a number of things which has since been verified by other people.